I'm actually here.
What are you rummaging around in your bag for?
For my notebook.
Oh, you have notes. Watch out. Watch out, John Steenhuisen. You're in big trouble now.
When the notebook comes out, be prepared.
I always have a notebook.
I'm a bit worried it's a written notebook as well.
I need to just kill this
thing. There we go. Also because the last time you guys were...
I should have bought my mask because the last time I was on your show, my facial expressions got policed.
But what happened with your facial expressions last time?
They got policed on your show.
Jesus, I remember that. That was...
Yeah, because the last time I left you people alone, you almost burnt down the damn...
Well, I haven't eaten Nando since then.
You haven't?
No.
I'm so proud of you. Thank you. All right, so listen, here he is, the official leader of the opposition, John Steenhuisen. You've been all over the news this week. It's appropriate to have you in now more than ever, but it's always appropriate to talk to someone who is contesting these elections, so close to the elections. And I know that there are lots of people already gearing up for a fight with you in the comments section, but you're used to that. And there are a lot of people who are already standing up for you, even though you haven't said anything that requires defense at this point. How's the campaign going, for starters? I see loads of advertising all over the place. Lots of posters. There's big competition.
Apparently, Howie polls, street polls are groaning.
Yes,
good.
Under the weight of DA posters.
Yeah, well, look, I think it's going very well. I'm very comfortable about where we're at in this stage of the campaign. We're roughly about 40 days out now. And I think we've put in the work over the last 2 years to get to where we are today. Certainly all credible polling showing that we're going to have a growth election. And I don't think any serious analyst is talking about a post-29 May future that doesn't have the DA playing a central role in it. So I think that's a good place you want to be at the party. Certainly delighted that my party is doing well in the polling. We certainly not like a margin of error party. And I think we're looking forward to good growth in this election, and I'm excited about that.
What are your exit polls saying?
Well, they've got
your internal.
Well, the internal ones. I mean, obviously, you don't like to share your internal polling too widely, but it's very much in line with the large mainstream polls that have been coming out from Brentus, Social Research Foundation, Victory Research, and others that show
the ones that people that don't like the DA say are rubbish.
Yes, of course. You know, if you know, they've got
these. But they also don't like Ipsos, and they say that's rubbish.
Well, I mean, I don't say Ipsos is rubbish. Nate Silver and his ratings agency that rates polls internationally have downgraded them to a B-.
All right. Everybody calm down.
a slight panic.
So, all right. First of all, I have to ask you about the squabbling that's been going on between you guys and Rise Mzansi. I mean, I was thinking Songezo Zibi was a softcore guy. Meanwhile, when the gloves come off, he can be quite aggressive.
Well,
and you have not shied away from that conflict to the point where I've heard a really strong DA supporter say to me, you know, I liked John until he started picking a fight with Songezo Zibi. So what do you have to say about
it? I had one line in a speech two Sundays ago. And
I'm just reporting.
And the thin skin of Mr. Zibi and his party has been exposed. I pointed out a simple matter that in the Western Cape, you open the door for the ANC and the EFF if you split the opposition. And it's not the gevaar that they're trying to portray it as. It's portrayed already in Knysna. It's already happened in Beaufort West. It's already happened now in Plettenberg Bay, where you vote for smaller parties. You split the vote. You let the ANC and EFF in. And I think it's a salutary warning. Where they got touched on their studio was when I pointed out that they support expropriation without compensation, which I think would be a disaster for the country. And yesterday I was in a debate with Mr. Zibi, which will be airing next week. He doubled down on expropriation without compensation. He supports race quotas. He supports BE. And I just made the point, well, you're not much different from the ANC if those are the policies you're going to be. But I'm not interested in fighting with a margin of error party. My main fight, and sort of the bulk of every other line of every speech I've made for the last 3 weeks, has been taking on the ANC, because that's the enemy. It's no use building an opposition to the opposition in South Africa. We should be working together to unseat the ANC, because that is the problem.
But, you know, you speak with a forked tongue, because on the one side, you say you're working on taking down the ANC. And again, very widely reported, your interview on the Daily Maverick, where you were talking about actually a coalition.
Hey, haven't the Daily Maverick closed doors?
Yeah. And I was quite fascinated.
I was going to make a financial contribution if they cancelled Rebecca Davis's comments. Well,
that's why I wouldn't.
I was quite fascinated to hear you say that you would be actually open, that is the best kind of answer post 29.
No, that's definitely not the best type of answer. And I think for me, you must go and
I watched maybe replay. I was interested
with the Daily Maverick at the gathering.
Not at the gathering. So you sat with the journalist?
I didn't sit with the journalist.
What were you saying about the ANC working with the DA?
I was asked a question about what's going to happen after the election. Ooh. I made the point that my sole focus for the next couple of weeks into the election is to get the multi-party charter over the 50% plus one line. That's why we formed the charter. The best case scenario for South Africa is that we get the ANC out of government, because we're not going to change anything with the same people who've got us into the mess sitting around the cabinet table in the union buildings. We've got to change who's sitting there. So that's why the multi-party charter has been working for the last year, to come up with joint policies, which we've been releasing on a two-weekly basis now, putting an alternative offer on the table for South Africans, 11 parties putting the differences aside and working to achieve that. That's the best case scenario for South Africa. I was asked what would happen after the election. I said, well, there's a lot of things that could happen, but we can sit all day and speculate about what those could be, but we won't know until the voters have put the cards on the table after the election. And I said, there may well be a chance that the MPC will have to go back to the drawing board and look at the results and choose the least worst option going forward. I don't think there's anything controversial about that, going full out to get a majority. But if it doesn't work, we've got to have fallback positions. And there's a number of permutations or scenarios that could develop, but these remain hypothetical at this stage because we don't know what's going to happen on the 29th of May.
Why don't you believe that you could have an outright majority after 20 years as the DA?
Well, because I think it would be the only party in the world that I think's gone from 20% in 2019 to 50% in 2024. I think that would be a historical leap for any party. What I can say is the DA has consistently grown since 94. We started at 1.7%. We're now, in the last local government elections, got just under 22%. We're a party that's growing, and we will continue to grow in this election.
It receded a little bit.
It receded a little bit in 2019 when the DA lost its way and started trying to become ANC light and start to prevaricate on some of the core values and principles. But we're back on track, and I think that's why voters are showing confidence now in a DA that is sure about who we are, sure about what we want for the country, but most importantly, doesn't just talk the talk. We're walking the walk where we govern, and that's the unique selling proposition.
So who are you? You know, for our listeners, who is the DA?
The Democratic Alliance is a party that is rooted in a liberal philosophy that believes in the primacy of the individual, which believes that government should focus on doing what government must do and doing it well, but that government should stay out of areas where the private sector and individuals can make decisions that are better suited for their lives. We believe not in the clunking fist of state. We believe in unleashing and unlocking the power of entrepreneurs and innovators, and to encourage that. We believe fundamentally in the key values that underpin any liberal democracy in the world: property rights, respect for the rule of law and the constitution, social market economy, making sure that we build a capable state free of cadre deployment and corruption, and a laser-like focus on lifting people out of poverty and into opportunity. That's who we are. That's what our policy suite is aimed at doing. And we, I think, are proving that we can walk that walk where we are given the opportunity to govern.
And what do you think it is that makes South Africans not resonate with this, that only 20% are voting for you?
Well, I think above 20% is a significant number of votes. If you look at some of the majority parties, the leading parties in countries around the world, they're all in the 20s.
John, my question is, what do you think it is that does not resonate with South Africans that they are not voting for you?
Well, I don't know, but you'd have to ask those voters. No. But 22% of South African voters believe that the DA is their political home and are voting for us consistently in elections. the people of the Western Cape, the city of Cape Town, Midvaal Municipality, Ungeni Municipality and KwaZulu-Natal, these are all people who have put faith in the DA. There may be people who think that having a big clunking state that controls every aspect of your life is a good thing. I disagree. I think it's a bad thing. There may be some people who think that keeping fat cat greedy politicians in office where they continue to manipulate the people of South Africa is a good thing. I happen to not think that's a good thing, and that's why we're working towards it.
I want to try and steel man the argument of those people who've criticized the multi-party charter. And I don't know whether I'm all that keen on everybody, even if it's colluding before in order to collude after, coming to these arrangements, whatever the case may be. I've heard lots of people who would be. And there's a lot of bickering in the opposition, right? There's a lot of like grandstanding and this is wrong and that's wrong. A lot of people have accused you personally and then the DA more generally of being very arrogant. I mean, this is a South African reality that people don't like the gorilla in the room. And in opposition politics, you're the gorilla in the room. So I'm trying
That was also what collapsed the Joburg.
No, that's not what collapsed Joburg. That's not what collapsed Joburg.
What collapsed
Joburg was the treachery of the Patriotic Alliance, who was shuttling between the coalition government there and the ANC, trying to get the fattest check. That's what collapsed the government. And eventually, out of principle, we said we're not going to be held to the extortionism of Gates and McKenzie and the PA, who have no interest in good governance, who only want to be able to get into positions for tenders and contracts. So, nothing to do with the arrogance of the DA. You have to be principled.
But what about, this is what they say, right? And you know this. This is not news to you. So Gayton was on the show not so long ago. He said, the DA is so arrogant, I can't work with him. He brought up Helen. There's always this shadow DA that operate. Are you really the leader? That kind of thing. You know, we hear about how all these other people in the federal, what is your thing called? The federal executive,
like the ANC has an NEC, Gayton has his, the EFF has their command council.
I'm just asking, is there any kind of shadow control? Are there people you have to check with before you make
statements? No, not at all. But I'm a democratically elected leader, and that is the 82% of the Democratic Alliance's Federal Congress, the party, elected me to lead them. I lead the party. But our party constitution, in line with liberalism, doesn't allow unfettered power to lie in the hand of an individual. We believe in the dissolution of power to prevent abuse of it. So we do have a federal executive, which is made up of the 9 provincial leaders. It's made up of the chairs of all of the and leaders of all of the ancillary bodies. It's made up of representatives from our councillors, our MPLs, our MPs. And that is the board of the DA, essentially, and that's how it operates. It's very different to these parties that I now see, even name the party after the leader. That's very odd. Parties that don't have internal congresses. Why is nobody asking some of these parties, why have you never had an internal congress? I've been through 3 already.
Pumi does, and she also asks them about succession plans, and some of them just don't have any. Mm. Their succession plan is just wait till I die and we'll figure it out.
Well, exactly.
So,
democratic infrastructure, is the point I'm making, is far better. It provides checks and balances and it ensures.
Your answer is acceptable. Now, another thing, these other parties say that you guys you bully them, that basically you say our way or the highway. It's not a multi-party charter, it's just the DA corralling everyone else to their whims and fancies.
That's not true. And if you look at the history of the Johannesburg coalition, there were 4 major concessions that were made in that coalition to keep it on track. All 4 of those concessions came from the Democratic Alliance. But we drew the line in the sand when the Patriotic Alliance insisted on, firstly coming to the table and saying Gayton should be the mayor, which we completely rejected. And secondly, that they get control of the portfolios where the Johannesburg markets are, which is very cash rich, and also the housing agency, the rental stock for the municipalities. We didn't want to give control there because we are very concerned at the capture and the abuse of that particular office. And I think that what's happening in Joburg now shows you that our fears were well-founded. There is widespread corruption and maladministration taking place in those portfolios. And I'm sorry, we learned a very important lesson in 2016 in the coalition however you term it, with the EFF, that you cannot be in coalition with people who do not share the same basic values and principles. Otherwise, you end up compromising yourself and end up being worse than what you've replaced.
To Gayton's credit, he has said all he wants is power. He's been very
and money.
He has been money. Very clear about
He said, I want power. I'll make friends with whoever I have.
So why do, when I say I don't want power, I want to be principled, am I the arrogant one? That doesn't make much sense to me.
Well, although, so exactly what you say you were trying to prevent, you would rather walk away and watch it all fall down. Isn't that the point? The point of politics is really about how you horse trade to be able to get what you need, what you want happen.
Of course.
You didn't get what you wanted and everything, you'd rather walk away.
No, of course, you want to try and get the best deal that you can, but not at all costs. There's only one thing worse than not having power, and that's having power and governing badly, and governing in a way that is exactly the same as what you've told voters you're seeking to replace. And that's exactly what happened to the DA in 2016. And we're still trying to recover from the damage that was done in that coalition when a blind eye was turned to chronic land invasions by the EFF in Lanesia and other parts of the city, where people are still very angry with the DA because they expected us to stand up for their property rights. And in order to keep a coalition on the track, the leadership at that time decided it would be a good idea just to appease the EFF. And we're still bearing the scars of that in places like Lanesia, as I say.
So what will stop any of that happening within the MPC? I think when we look back at some of the parties, whether it's Independent Democrats, whether it's Akhang with Mampela, those organizations came in with the DA and those organizations no longer exist.
Yeah. Well, let me say there's a very big difference.
What is the DA doing to these people?
The very big difference is that, and it's precisely the learnings from what happened at local government election after those elections and what has happened at local government level since then, that made me realize that the urgency in April last year for the opposition to get together. What happened in the last local government elections, we all went in merrily into the election. No one had a plan. Suddenly you've defeated the ANC's majority, and now you've got to form a government in 14 days. There's not enough time to put together a solid principle-based agreement, and that's the difference with the MPC. In April last year, I said, let's get together as the opposition. Everybody at the time said it would never happen. 2 months later, we were all sitting at Emperor's Palace and we merged with an agreement, 8 parties at the time, grown to 11. These are our values and principles. This is what we hope to achieve in government. And this is how we will embark upon power sharing within this particular governance arrangement. Far more organized and coherent going into the election to prevent precisely the type of chaotic horse trading that you see taking place in a pressure cooker environment where you've got 14 days only to form
Do you agree, because I remember Helen used to be a big proponent of this, that the good ANC will be the right coalition partners along the way? Do you think that's
I don't know where I'm still waiting to be shown the good ANC.
Okay, no, but clearly then there isn't a good ANC. In your opinion,
I think the best thing for the ANC I've spent 22 years of my life acting in the ANC's worst interest. But I think the best thing for the ANC actually would to be spend some time in the opposition benches. I think if you look at healthy democracies around the world, parties come into power, they're then relegated to the opposition benches. It gives them an opportunity to renew their personalities, renew the policies, etc. The Conservatives are about to spend, I think, a good 2 terms of parliament on the opposition benches. They've been in power for the last 12 years.
Makes them soft.
And I think it being in opposition forces you to rethink. And I mean, I think
I've said a million times that there's a double standard that we apply to the DA in this country. We expect you guys to get it right every time. And we don't expect that from the ruling party because they get given rounds of applause when they open a tap, you know?
Gareth, I'm very happy to be held to the higher standard because and please continue to do so because I think if we expect to be held to the same standard as ANC, I think that's a very low bar and I think South Africans deserve better.
Fair enough. One other quick thing I want to dispense with because it's always at the back of everyone's mind is the race question in the DA. It's the fact that you as the leader are a white man. People say it's a white party. This is the perception, regardless of how hard you may have worked and how hard previous party leaders might have worked and the federal executive might be working, and no matter how many people you put in various places, it's always going to be the perception that the DA is a white party. And I asked someone a question last night, Pumi, I think you were there. I said, look, at a granular level, let's do a two-bit resolution map of South African politics. So if you're a white party, ANC is a black party, MK is a black party, the EFF is a black party, BOSA is a black party, Action SA is a black party. I think you get where I'm going. So even if you were, by that very low resolution, to be a white party, then it maps roughly with South Africa's demographics anyway. In fact, it shows that you've got more than the white support in any case. And if that were as bad as it got, so what? Like, there are all these other parties. There are always going to be black people who want to vote for the white party, white people who want to vote for the black party, but that's at a much higher resolution. Why are we still stuck on this?
I don't know, and it's very frustrating to me, Gareth. I will say this, though. If the DA was a white party, we'd be sitting at 6% in the polls. And that's if every single white person voted for us. We'd be sitting at 6%. We're not. We're sitting in the low 20s and hope to obviously grow on that.
And a lot of those whites are very disloyal if you're a white party.
The Social Research Foundation actually did some incredibly good polling last year on party political support. And I think it's very instructive, is that while the party bases of and voters of parties to the left and right of us are monochromatic, the DA draws its voter base from roughly a third white, a third black, and a third colored and Indian. So we have by far the most diverse support base. But just look at the party. Yes, I'm a white South African. I can't change that. You know, there was no button on the way out that you can self-select how you come out. I can't change that. But I can get up every single day and do my best to fight for this country that I love. And if we're going to exclude people from politics based on the color of their skin, well, then we're right back in 1948 again. But then we say, well, only black people can do politics in South Africa. I think that would be a huge mistake. I think people have got a contribution to make. And I would hope that we've moved beyond that, just as I don't think anybody criticizes Rishi Sunak, happens to be part of a minority in the UK, that he's prime minister or leader of the Conservative Party. I don't think that anybody was hung up on the fact that Barack Obama was part of a minority in his country, even though he was part of a minority group in that particular country. I think people should be judged on how they contribute and how they serve. Helen Sussman showed us very well that you don't have to be a black political prisoner on Robben Island to stand up for black political prisoners on Robben Island. Just as I don't have to be a poor, marginalized black South African to stand up every day and fight for their rights and for a better deal for them in a country that has let them down badly. And that's what my work focuses on. I can't change my color, but I can change the country. And that's my focus.
And what is your vision for this country?
My vision for this country
is... What is your vision for this country in the next 5 years? Yeah. And what is your vision for this country 100 years?
Well, for the next 5 years, the vision is to get these basic things right. And that's why our manifesto focuses on just 7 things. You know, generally, political manifestos come with a long laundry list of things, you know, that we want to achieve with everybody's pet project. We've made the 7 key things that we have to get right in the next 5 years to make anything else on a longer list possible. Fixing load shedding and water shedding. Mm-hmm. Making sure we rejig the criminal system to make sure that we can keep people safe. Making sure that we are able to lift 6 million people out of poverty. It's not sustainable to live in a country with 30 million people, 99.97% of whom are black, are trapped below the poverty line in the country. We have to build a capable state that can deliver in a way that serves people and not politicians. We need to absolutely focus on fixing our education system over the next 5 years so that young children have a chance in a very changed world of work. The reality is you're not competing anymore with fellow citizens and citizens of other countries. You're competing with AI. If you cannot read for meaning, like 82% of young grade 4 learners can, you don't stand a chance in that world. So we've got to fix that. Those are the things we've got to get right for the next 5 years. I believe those things are the bedrock to building a prosperous, open, more inclusive country with a government that's working for the people, not against them, and where everybody in the country, regardless of their skin color, has a fair shot at getting an opportunity to improve their lives. I think we focused far too much in the last 30 years, and I think that it's not necessarily an evil thing that the ANC tried to do. I think that there was their way of trying to address the problems. It hasn't worked as well as they thought it would. And I think we've neglected the opportunity side of the economy in South Africa while trying to manage an equality of outcome. Our focus on our policy suite, our economic justice policy, our soon-to-be jobs policy, focus on how you can create an equality of opportunity in the country. So that it doesn't matter what your skin color is, whether you're rural or urban, you get a fair shot at getting a decent education, good early childhood development, a chance at getting a job, being able to study without having your fees ripped off by NSFAS, being able to get out there and start a small business if you want to, being able to live in a safe community, having infrastructure that supports your business and your endeavors, making sure that every citizen has access to quality, universal healthcare in the country, getting those basic things right so that we build in a platform for future prosperity and growth. And that's how I think we're going to unlock the real potential in South Africa. But it's not going to change if we have the same people around the same table making the same bad decisions as we've seen over the last 30 years.
I come from a marketing background and because of media communication. And often we're told that what is said and what is heard are not always the same thing. What do you think people hear as the DA when you say all these things? Why? What? Because I'm still trying to get to the reason that when you sit in your war room, that says we're trying to get more South Africans to hear us. What do you think they hear you say? If these are the things that you're saying that makes it difficult for them to get over the, when they're in the ballot, get over the hump that says, I'm going to put my X here.
Well, I think that every political party's mission is to make sure that their message is heard and that it resonates with people. And I think we do have an advantage in that, is that it's not necessarily only telling people what they should hear. It's showing people what we've done. I think showing in marketing is far better than telling. And some of the most simple adverts in marketing don't have a long telling part of the advert. The advert is a simple picture that shows you something.
So
when we show 300,000 new jobs in the Western Cape over the last year, that's gives credibility to the promise that we're making to get people jobs. When we jailed 27,000 criminals because of the law enforcement advancement program that's put policemen and women on the streets in some of the most dangerous areas in the Western Cape, that's showing people rather than telling them. And I think showing is a much more powerful weapon.
On the matter of showing, and you've got some good case studies. I saw you tweeted this out yesterday about Jordan Hill Lewis. Yeah, you said City of Cape Town spending 39.7 billion rand on infrastructure and investing in infrastructure over the next 3 year period. Joburg's only spending 22 billion by comparison. And then of course we've got eThekwini and the smaller cities there as well. Cape Town is a good example. I wonder if you guys aren't being a little naive about the Patriotic Alliance stealing some of your thunder in Cape Town. Are you worried about that? Is that something that's come up in your war rooms? Because Gayton's convinced he's going to give you a hiding.
Well, Gayton is like the classic schoolroom bully. He goes around threatening to donner everybody, but rushes off to the toilets in the tea break when the time comes. And I think we're going to see that in the election. There's no doubt he will pick up support. We're seeing a disintegration of good. We're seeing a disintegration of some of those parties there in the Western Cape. But is he going to reduce the Western Cape's DA majority? Absolutely not.
I don't think he cares about how much is spent on infrastructure, for example.
Well, he's going to care how much is spent on infrastructure when the tenders start rolling
out. Maybe Pumi's right. Like, there's a disconnect and maybe South Africa...
Even in the Western Cape, this is the DA's shining example of how well they do.
And it is, by the way. I mean, it is evident to anyone who's been there.
Gareth, can I finish?
Sorry.
So even in the Western Cape, and this is why you would say the opposition parties don't split the opposition, right? Even in the Western Cape, where you have all of these shining examples, the growth of the DA's majority in the Western Cape doesn't reflect that. That's why Arise would say in a democratic South Africa, we're going to contest everywhere, right? Is because there is that. Those people in the Western Cape, they're not, more of them are not voting for the DA. And why is it not translating into? And the question for me really is, what is the disjuncture, in your view, what is the disjuncture for the voter?
Well, I think the disjuncture in the past has been around trust. You know, is this a party that really is going to work for me? And I think that in, is this a party that's going to represent me and my opinions and my viewpoints and my wants and my desires? And I think that what has happened and changed over the last 4 to 5 years is that politics has become very real for South African citizens. Load shedding has reached into people's homes and switched off the electricity. You and Joburg here are sitting without water for days on end, not because there's no water in the dams, but because the infrastructure is broken. And I think that in this election, it's going to be a lot easier to jump over that trust barrier if you're able to show people exactly what we're doing in Cape Town around infrastructure. And I'm going to just make the point, 73% of that infrastructure is being built in previously disadvantaged areas, in township areas, in informal settlements, and in poorer neighborhoods. And, you know, it is, Joe Biden famously said when he still could, you know, don't tell me what your priorities are, show me your budget, and I'll tell you what your priorities are. And if you look at the city of Cape Town's budget and the Western Cape, and let me just be very clear here, the Western Cape is not perfect, not by a long way. We've got a long way to go still in dealing with those apartheid era social backlogs. Spatial inequality is still a big issue in Cape Town, as it is in every major city in the country. So, you know, you get these trolls and others who come and say, yes, but Khayelitsha is not Camps Bay. Of course it's not. I never said it is. But just as Sandton isn't Alex and Umlazi isn't Umhlanga, that is the case. But if you look at the access to basic services in all of those places, not the DA's propaganda machine, Ratings Africa, the Auditor General, and COGTA's national report itself, highest access to basic services, closest proximity to medical and healthcare, highest access to jobs, best run public transport system, all of these are rolled out where the DA governs. And these things do make a difference, because these are the things that are the things that are going to beat inequality in South African unemployment.
John, I'm going to go to comments here, because there's someone called Patrick in the comments. I can't figure out whether he likes you or hates you. But he says, first of all, don't lie. You're scared of losing colored votes to Gayton. And then he says later on, tell me about Kocha. He says, on the municipal level, I want to know what is going on to the DA in Kocha next to PE. It's like an ANC municipality. Roads are cuck, services cuck. I've been there many times on weekends, he says. Tell us why the residents of Kocha should vote DA, because they're getting nothing better than they would under the ANC.
Well, it's the best-run municipality in the Eastern Cape.
He doesn't think so.
It's not perfect.
Okay.
But compared to East London, Buffalo City, take a drive there. And as I say, you know, people expect that the DA is going to have roads paved with gold. There are huge challenges in these municipalities, particularly when you inherit municipalities that are so fundamentally broken. And remember as well that these municipalities also exist in a macro environment. They're not islands in the stream. They exist in a macroeconomic environment where a national government is not doing enough to grow the economy, to attract investment into the country, to be able to ensure that we retain skills, to ensure that we provide quality services. And so these municipalities are really up against it in a failed province like the Eastern Cape, where you've got a provincial government that doesn't do what it should do. You've got a national government that's destroying the macro environment. And it's very difficult in these municipalities. Chris Pappas is up against it in Umgeni municipality, and he's doing the best he can. Is Umgeni pothole free? Absolutely not. But sure, it's in a much better state than it was when we inherited it. And Kocha is the same. We've got a record of action there. We've got a promise of more, and we will get there. But just think how much easier it would be if we had a DA or an MPC provincial government in the Eastern Cape that was working with the municipality to be able to ensure that it can really get things moving.
Nkululeko is going for low-hanging fruit here, but he says, can you ask John, what is the price of bread? Because that tripped up Julius Malema the other day.
I think the last time I looked at ShopRite, it's 19 Rand 90.
It's very expensive. Okay.
Tin of pilchards, 24.60 at ShopRite.
Okay, you've done your homework.
Liter of milk, 19.75 at ShopRite. Right.
What about this?
Just do the research after. Who was asked about all the price of bread and
Well,
let me just tell you how I know that, because I do my own shopping. And I think it's very important, and I've said very clearly, the day that I can't walk into my local Pick and Pay and do my shopping is the day I'll leave politics.
And you don't have huge security detail and blue light brigade, do you?
I've had to have I've had to have two people come in with me today because I was fearing a mauling from you and Pumi. I might need to be escorted out. So
we haven't made it too comfortable. We haven't made it completely shit. So let's just go to this. Patrick also has.
My own car, which I might tell you. I see somebody's going on about lifestyle all the time. I'm actually too embarrassed to put a lifestyle order on the table. I drive a 45-year-old Mercedes Benz, which I drive myself.
Wow. Still goes, huh?
Still goes perfectly. Yeah.
So
Mercedes Benz.
Patrick says to continue his either argument or his admiration for you. He says, I'm voting Freedom Front Plus simply due to Courtney Mulder being the adult in the room regarding coalition politics, unlike literally the rest. So are you
– Clearly Patrick is a Freedom Front man, and that's fine. And he must vote for who he thinks he is. I happen to like Courtney Mulder, but, you know, I think
that – He likes the IFP as well, he says.
Okay, well, that's good.
But the question I have is, yeah, there's this constant discussion of being outflanked on the right. I mean, the DA is pretty much a centrist party. I don't think you consider yourselves right. The Freedom Front, we had Peter Groenewald in here the other day. He says he's center-right. Mm. Are you worried about being outflanked and losing votes to the Freedom Front? They've certainly grown.
Yeah, I think they're going to struggle in this election. I don't think it's going to be an easy one for them. I think they fed a lot off the DA's 2019 blue jelly, where people were unsure what the DA was and who it stood for, and the flip-flopping and endless wobbling about on issues. I think the DA, since I've taken over, is far more clear on its values and principles, what we will accept, what we won't accept, what we stand for, and what we want to achieve in the country. And I think they're going to struggle there in that particular. But look, I mean, I'm not interested in leading factions and fractions. The point of the DA is to unite and lead the whole. And that's what we want to do. We want to bring people together, not around race identity, not around language identity, not around cultural identity, but around a coalescence around values and principles. Because I think that's the only way we're going to bring South Africans together at the center, the rational center, is around values and principles. And values and principles that we can all agree are the requirements to be able to build a stable society on. Things like respect for the law, individual responsibility, individual freedom, things like getting government out of the way of citizens.
And how easy has it been to organize people around the center with your MPC, including breakaways such as Action SA, and people who have historically eaten into, we've seen kind of in 2019 and 2021, them actually winning some wards off the DA and really pulling some numbers away from the DA. How easy has it been to coalesce people around the center with individuals who you essentially fight with?
Look, it hasn't been easy, and I'm honest about that, but I don't think anything worth doing is ever easy. And I fundamentally sat down before my Congress last year when I stood for re-election and I said, what do we need to do as South Africa if we're going to get out of this mess? Or we're going to have Groundhog Day in the 2024 election, where the ANC is going to take advantage of a squabbling, disunited opposition, and it's going to once again prevail. And it took a lot of thought and a lot of putting pride in pocket. But I said, let's leave our egos at the door. Let's leave the scars of battle past at the door. And let's focus on the people who really matter. It's not us and our egos and our, battles that we've had with people at Congress has passed. The imperative here is to rescue the people of South Africa and to rescue the country from the manipulators in the ANC who manipulate voters every election. And I think that the MPC, for all of its warts and whatever its shortcomings may be, remains, as we sit in the studio today, the largest voting bloc outside of the ANC and the most credible path to victory for the opposition in the country.
Can you hold it together until the election?
Well, I think we've been holding it together just fine. We meet the leaders meet every second Thursday. We've got a meeting this evening. In between that, we have a technical team and a marketing team and a policy team that meet in the preceding week. And I think there's been a remarkable process of synergizing 11 parties' approaches into these documents that we've been releasing about what our priorities would be in government, how we would end load shedding, how we'd keep people safe, how we would build a capable civil service. And I think that
I imagine that the practical stuff is easy enough because we can all see what needs doing. Is there a lot of ideology in those conversations or very little?
Look, I think that the big difference here is that, and that this is why the first section of the multi-party charter meeting at the Empress Palace was to focus on values and principles. Do we all agree that these are the core values and principles that are common to all of our parties? And you know, and can we unite around those? And that's the agreement, and that's where it comes in. So yes, we will have differences on the periphery. Probably a different view to the ACDP on a variety of issues. Differences with Herman and Action SA on immigration, but on the core things that we need to get right over the next 5 years, I believe there's complete unanimity, and I think it's reflected in those synergized offers that we've now put before the people of South Africa to say, look, we've put aside our differences, we've united, we now need you to come and unite behind us to get us over that 50% plus one mark. And that is the focus for us over the next couple of weeks as we lead into the election.
We had all these young people here yesterday talking about ideology, talking about stuff on the ground. And unanimously, all of them said nothing about what is offered by all the political parties is exciting to them. What is your party's stance and view on how to get more young people? Because that's where the answer is, right? Is in getting more young people engaged, more young people into the ballot box, and post the election, more young people interested enough to be part of the working solutions.
Well, you've got to meet young people where they are. And having public meetings and expect young people to come to town hall meetings is not where they are. And that's why we've invested so much time and effort on social media and changing the way in which we went out and did registration. We had a big youth focus on registration. We had competitions on social media where you could win cool prizes and if you came through to register. We had a huge Rock the Registration event in a place like KwaZulu-Natal, thousands of young people coming to listen to the artists, but having registration stations set up where they could come and register online. So it's about meeting young people where they are, but also making sure that your lists have young people on them and that you have young people in Parliament. I mean, the ANC's parliamentary list looks like a Sasa pay point on the 25th. Look at the DA. We've got young people, Leolo Mpiti. We've got Nazli Sharif. We've got Siviwe Gahube, is under 40, and is the chief whip of the opposition, the first black female chief whip of the opposition. We don't talk about empowering young people. They are leading from the front in the DA, and I think that's great.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting thing. You have these leaders. We had Chris Pappas in here not so long ago. We've spoken to Silas Brink from Pretoria, Jordan Hill Lewis. And these are people who are, to my mind, seemingly like, you know, rising stars. You've got the election coming up now. If you win the MPC, let's say the multi-party coalition gets a really amazing turnout, and it could happen. I mean, you're hoping for that to happen. Would you be president?
Well, we haven't decided who will be president yet. And there's a very good reason for that. A, we don't have a presidential system in South Africa. And B, it's going to be determined by whether we get over the line and where the votes are going to come from. If what we will do after the election, once the results become clear, is convene as the MPC and say, right, who are we going to put up as the presidential candidate? I have made it clear, in a massive sign of my arrogance and overweening ego, that, and clear from day one of the MPC meeting, that this isn't about getting me in as the president. And we specifically put that in the clause in the MPC agreement that the largest party won't necessarily be the president. Shows you what a big ego I have. So we will sit down afterwards and start, who can best unite?
No, that's why I'm asking.
Unite people.
Everybody who isn't you is saying, oh no, John, this is the whole plan.
I've made it very clear that the largest party, however, must occupy the leader of government business position. And there's a very good reason for that, is that if we're going to fix South Africa, we're going to rescue South Africa, we've got to drive a legislative reform agenda through Parliament. One of the big mistakes that Cyril Ramaphosa made is that he announced this wonderful new dawn, but he didn't translate it into any legislation. So it's now vanished like the morning mist, which is why I've got a set of bills lined up that we would like to get through Parliament in the first year, bringing back the scorpions, ending CADA deployment, breaking
slashing ministries.
Yes, slashing ministries, breaking regulations that are inhibiting entrepreneurs, lifting the import duties on small buckies so that young entrepreneurs in the country are able to have affordable vehicles to roll out their businesses. These are some of the exciting things that, that we've got planned. It's not going to happen if you don't aren't able to push through a legislative agenda. And I think that, that's why that position of leader of government business is going to be an important position. And as you know, I've got a massive passion for Parliament, you may or may not have noticed. but that's where I think we are going to reform the country, is through legislative reform that actually translates your vision into action.
So for a very long time, things were just ticking along in terms of what it's looking like going into the votes. And we were talking about turnouts more than anything, was where the difference would lie, right? Because all the numbers, the way that the numbers are, all the members of the MPC right now, if they get the same numbers that they got in the last election, they're not going to get a 50 plus one. And then along came MK, which has been quite a disruptor. When you look at that disruption, what are your what is your war room and your polling telling you about how you have to recalibrate going into this election?
It's not about a recalibration. It's about it being excited, because if I look at our polling, and I certainly look at some of the credible polls that have come out there, it all ties in. MK will be the third largest party in the country after this election. It, they are the biggest party in KZN currently on the polling. But they've eaten the votes, not from the opposition. They've eaten the votes directly out of the ANC and the EFF. And anything that weakens their majority makes our job as the MPC getting over the line a lot easier. Of course, we don't have 50% plus one now. If we did, we'd be in government. But I think with the large number, of new voters on the voters' roll, and the fact that there were 14 million people in the last election who stayed at home because variety of reasons. Some said, oh, the ANC is going to win anyway, so I'm off to the beach or to play golf. My vote's not going to make a difference. Those people now with the MPC can see that there is a path to victory. And I think that's giving them hope. And I think that's reflected in the larger number of new registrations as well. I think that the situation in the country has got so dire and so bad, and poor government decisions are now affecting people's daily life, from whether they've got water in their taps, electricity in their homes, whether they've got a job to go to, the roads they travel to work, whether those are exploding or riddled with potholes or not, whether your local government is able to pick up your refuse. All of these things have shown people that they may not be interested in politics.
So have you made a call to get them over into the MPC?
No, because I don't know what their values and principles are or their policy. And they've been very, I think, shy on coming forward and saying, these are our principles. I mean, it's not like Gayton who comes and says, these are my principles. If you don't like them, I have others. They haven't even shown us what their principles are. I don't know what their economic policy is. And this is the thing. So once we know those things, it'll allow
us. Isn't that where the opportunity is? You can help them figure those things out.
Well, I think
it's
up to them to figure those things out. And we'll obviously have to see where the chips lie after the election. But we see them in places like KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng particularly as a stepping stone for the MPC to be able to get over the line and be able to form a majority there, because they've cannibalized the ANC to such a degree that it's wholesale structures that are going across in places like KZN. And I think that they are going to assist being a roadblock to the ANC's national majority.
So in terms of absolute numbers, and I saw somebody in the comments also spoke about them, when I look at absolute numbers of who has voted for the DA, from 94 when there was no DA, when the NP and the DP were still there, the absolute numbers show not even when you had a bump, they really are around that 3 million mark from then to today. What is going to give you this big bump this time around? Because you haven't, in all those years, when you merged and became the DA, the numbers stayed the same. The two parties' numbers became DA numbers, absolute numbers. So even in 2019, those were your absolute numbers. Mm. What is going to give you the bump this time around?
A compelling message of hope and change for South Africa and a record of delivery, being able to show rather than tell people what we've done. We're not speaking about creating an economy that works. We've done so. We don't talk about creating a capable state. We've delivered it in the Western Cape. We don't talk about fighting crime. We're doing it every single day. And I think being able to tell show voters rather than tell them that record of action is going to be compelling. I think that the manifesto as well sets out the problem. It's not the DA pointing fingers and saying all the ANC is rubbish. It sets out the problem. It puts on the table a solution and then goes further to say, and this is how we're doing it in the Western Cape, whether it's creating prosumers, whether it's beating load shedding, whether it's keeping people safe on the streets, whether it's creating jobs, quality, affordable healthcare, making sure children have a better opportunity to be able to build a better future. Those are the things that are going to move people in this election.
What happens if the DA loses ground?
Well, I mean, we'll have to.
If you recede, what's your plan?
Well, I mean, we're going to have to go back to the drawing board and have a look. I mean, if we go backwards from 2019, I think my position would be pretty unsustainable going forward. But I'm not thinking in that. I know we're going to grow in this election. I'm absolutely, passionately believe that we're going to grow. I spent last year on the ground visiting small towns. I'm on a tour around all the metros. At the moment, as part of the Rescue South Africa tour, we're in Ekurhuleni on Friday night. We were in Cape Town last week and in Pretoria the weekend before, sharing this message of hope and change with people and getting onto the doorstep. That's what's going to move the needle.
There are a lot of people who are supporting you in the comments. There are equally some criticisms. There are two people who are very persistent here. Congo Chris wants to know about the Danoon Trash Lake, which I didn't know was a thing. Maybe you could tell me what that is. What is the Danoon Trash Lake?
It's an area in Cape Town, which is in the heart of an informal settlement, where because people are throwing rubbish into it, it is virtually polluted 24 hours a day. And it is something that the city is trying to sort out, but it is obviously very, very difficult. I mean, obviously, short of putting a cover onto it, you're not going to be able to stop people throwing rubbish into it. And so the city goes and they've got units that go in and rake up all the rubbish and clear it out. But within a week or two, it's back there again. But this is why, this is exactly why we're trying to move people closer to the city center, creating well-located government-owned land closer to the urban center to build mixed-use social housing developments. There's two new ones going up in Woodstock. The city's just won a court case to get some more sites accessed. The Conradi Park development there, bringing people closer to the city center makes it a lot easier because you have the existing infrastructure. You don't have people living on dolomitic land where it's impossible to put in basic services, even if you wanted to do so. And that's what the focus is on, bringing people closer to the urban core, being able to ensure that they have a cross-subsidized housing system where you've got bond owners living with people on social housing, and there's a cross-subsidization with a portion of the land mainly being financed through a public-private partnership deal with a commercial or shopping center. Okay. It's a system that's working, and very excitingly, in a partnership with Kuro Schools, there's now good quality private education being made accessible for the first time to lower-income families, and I think it's going to be a game-changer.
Well, the other person here is Luando, who wants to know desperately who I'm voting for. And Pumi and I have made a decision that we'll only say who we're voting for the week before the election.
That's brave.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've still got three weeks to work on Pumi.
Pumi's always accused of being anti-DA.
It depends on when you come to the show.
And then she's anti-everyone else. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
So at least you're consistent in your antiness. That's the main thing.
I'm an equal opportunity offender.
But don't
worry, so am I.
And don't base your votes on me because I've got it wrong at least four times.
Well, listen, I think you've got a slightly better track record than Peter Bruce.
marginally. Okay.
One thing that hasn't come up in the comments, and interested to know what you think your stance on Israel is going to do to your Muslim vote in the Western Cape.
Well, yeah, I think that any Muslim voter would know what our position has been since 2014, and it hasn't changed. We believe in a two-state solution. with a independent, unoccupied Palestine living next door to secure Israel. And that's why we've been very clear that both sides need to come to the table, the hostages need to be released, and we need to negotiate towards a peaceful solution. And I'm sorry that South Africa has taken such a partisan stand in this as a government, because I think that our story in South Africa should be one that would give the people of that region hope. Many people thought our situation in the country was intractable for decades. And it was only through the two sides coming together around the table that birthed our beautiful constitution and was the midwife towards our democracy. And I think the longer we continue in a state of war in that region, I think the more civilians are going to suffer, and it's terrible to see the human suffering on both sides after that ghastly terror attack, but now to see the civilian casualties as a result of the bombardment. And I worry, if I look in the last week, the escalation now with Iran coming into the picture with its attack, I'm worried that things are going to escalate into a far bigger regional crisis in the Middle East. And so I think the sooner we can get mature heads around the table there. Now, look, I'll be very clear. Radicals on both sides are not going to like the DA's position. But we're not here to pander to the radicalists who are only happy if you stand on the steps of Parliament, wave their flag, and call for the abject destruction of the other side. That's not us. We're on the side of peace. We're on the side of rationality and not on radicalism. And so we will continue with that path. And there may be voters who like it and there may be voters who don't like it, but I think it is rational. I think it is sensible. And I think it is the way forward towards finding a longer lasting solution.
So do you think it's going to have an impact on the number of people?
No, because I say, I think that people, and certainly if I look at the polling and look at some of the work that's been done here, not only by us, but by independent pollsters, that people are far more concerned about what's happening on the West Bank of the Yuxke River than the West Bank in Gaza. They worry about jobs. They worry about their children's future. They worry about the fact they don't have a house.
And while on the word West, what do you guys have been fairly clear, but I want to give you a chance to say it again about Western Cape independence, which some people are still touting as a viable option. What's your feeling on that? Because we've asked the other parties.
I think it's a waste of energy, and I think it's a wasted effort, because there's some really low-hanging fruit that we should be grasping at the moment, and that is devolution of power. We've shown with the LEAP program and by devolving policing powers to a local level how that can really make a difference in combating crime and criminality. Said 27,000 arrests in the last year alone, just the LEAP officers in those hotspot areas. The ISS has moved Inyanga off its murder capital list now because of the focus of resources there. If we can get greater devolution on rail, on ports and harbors, on electricity, I think that is the low-hanging fruit. And the Constitution is there and allows it already without us having to change a single law. Why would we want to now spend effort and time in a long process that the people of Catalonia are still fighting many decades later, the people of Scotland have still been fighting, Quebec, etc., these long drawn out existential arguments, when what we should be focusing on is what is graspable in the immediate future. And we can have devolution after the 29th of May. People vote for us at a national level.
Well, I mean, if I am a single issue voter, it must be that local government's more important than national government.
Of course. Tip O'Neill famously said it. All politics is local.
Yeah, I don't care who the president is. Mm. Actually, it makes very little difference to me on a day-to-day basis. I'm more interested in those streetlights working, the river not being polluted. These are the things where government actually could make a difference in
absolutely. But don't lose sight of the fact that a collapsing macro environment does push downward pressure on municipalities.
We all know that. Yeah. We feel it every day, right? Okay, so Cyril and the ANC, they've kicked their campaign into high gear now. There's lots of advertising up all over the place. You guys, you're going to run out of money, or are you good on that front too?
Oh, we're always looking for more money, Gareth. You should know that. We're always on the bones, and just a little bit more would get us over the line.
Well, I mean, people always want to know who your funders are, and you guys have to reveal who the funders
Correct.
Are. I think it's over 100,000. Mm. Who your big funders?
Well, it's all publicly available. It's mainly private businesses and corporations that give us money.
A lot of those guys also support other parties.
Mm. Correct. And, you know,
which I always find very odd. Like, they can't even put their money where their mouth is.
Well, I mean, I would love them to give it all to us, but as long as they're giving it, as long as they're giving it to the MPC parties and not to parties outside of the MPC.
Some of them are. Some of them are giving to the ANC and the DA as if that's.
But it's like going to the casino and putting on red and black. But anyway, I think they want to, I think they're invested, and thank goodness they're giving money, because I can tell you right now, if we did not have private donors in this environment, the ANC would completely dominate, because they've got access to the tenders and contracts. You saw how much they fed off Hitachi and the deal there around Kusile and Medupi. You've seen how their greatest single donor is a Putin-linked oligarch, Viktor Vekselberg. We would be in a very difficult situation if we weren't able to rely on those donors. And I'm very grateful that we do have people in the country who are committed to seeing a viable multi-party democracy survive.
All right. I got to ask you one last thing. You know, I asked Herman Mashaba this as well. I was like, you don't have to. And I know you're going to give me the whole, we all got to fight for our country. Everyone has to play their part thing. Is there a personal toll on all of this? You're like constantly having to fight. And I heard you talk about social media earlier. And I'm lucky enough I can get off there if I don't want to. And I did for a long time. And actually life was much more pleasant. Are you not tempted by the idea of just saying, right, fuck all of you, I'm out of here. Sometimes.
Yes.
Long pause.
Yes, I am. I want to give you as honest an answer as I can. Yes, I get frustrated. I get most frustrated by a media that keeps trying to find a moral equivalence between the DA and the ANC, despite the fact that we get things mostly right and they get things mostly wrong. And that frustrates me no end. But Gareth, I mean, I've been doing this since I was 22 years old in public life. It's become my life. I've developed a very thick skin. I'm a straight shooter, and some people don't like that, as I'm sure you experience as well. But I don't think anybody can be under any misconception about what I'm saying when I say it, and I like that. But it does take its toll, and the people who suffer the most are our family. You know, I had to watch my daughter last night reading a bedtime story to herself, which my wife sent me a video of. And that's usually my job when I'm home. But when you're on the campaign trail, it's 4 days out, 5 days out, 2 days at home. And it does take a toll. And people often say, what is your biggest weakness in life? And my biggest weakness is that I don't carve out enough time for my family. But the mission is just so important, Gareth, to rescue South Africa. You know, and I see it as what I'm doing is going to build a viable place where we all can live and raise our families. I hold no passport for another country. I don't have any citizenship anywhere else in the world. I haven't been offered asylum by Jeff Bezos, as some of the tinfoil hats try and say when I sold in the Western Cape. You know, and I've got to make this place work, not only for me and my family, but for all of the people here. I think we've got a great country here. This little piece of earth on the southern tip of this continent is a terrific place. And I've been to many places in the world. They don't compare. And I think she's worth the fighting for. And that's what gets me out of bed every morning.
I think that's a great place to end. And I think
Pums, we want one last thing from you. Well,
you know what? Elections are like the Hunger Games. And I love listening to all of the polls and all of that stuff. And polls told us one thing, and then we woke up and there was Brexit. Mm-hmm. Polls told us one thing, we woke up and there was Donald Trump. So I hope your polls are in your favor.
May the polls be always in your favor.
In your favor. And I think it was fantastic. Thank you for coming.
Thank
and
you for me.
Thanks for a couple more weeks of being out there on the ground. Good luck to you. We're going to have this conversation again after the 29th of May. And may the odds be in your favor.
Thank you so much.
I've said it to every party, and good luck.
Thank you. You know, and thanks for what you guys do to keep media alive and bear fair and balanced comment going in the country. Thank you very much. It's always wonderful to be with you guys.
The audience are split. There's some people here are devotees. There's nothing you can do wrong. And there's some people there's nothing you can do right.
It was ever thus.
All right. Thank you. John Stanley is the leader of the DA, and the election's just over 50 days away. So you got to start making your mind up. Everybody who's undecided at this point, get on your bicycle, do your homework. And we're getting all the leaders in here to talk about what they stand for. There's some tough questions, and there will be some more for the other leaders who are still to come. And then there's some moments where we kind of think, okay, well, that makes sense. I can't really argue with it. I hope you found some of the former and some of the latter. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.